Merkel Media.
And he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I'm your host, Tony Merkel.
And I am Brian Merkel.
And we're really glad you're here. If you have a crazy, wild experience from the road that you want to share with us on the show, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hllpodcast@protonmail.com. That's hllpodcast@protonmail.com. Or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com. Hit the contact section, and you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us. Dad, you got something to say?
I do. All right. We have a voicemail line.
Yeah.
And when you have a short story, you know, 5-10 minutes, you know, something short, give us a call. 515-585-6375. That's 515-585-MERK. And I have one more thing to say. While you're there at HammerLaneLegends.com, do us a favor. Check out the gear.
Yeah.
Check it out. See if there's anything there you'd like to have that says Hammer Lane Legends on it.
Yeah, there's some cool designs on there. And you can get mugs and all that cool stuff. So check it out. I wasn't sure if you wanted to bring up the fact that the people listening to the show should start, you know, getting people that they know for better drivers.
I do want to. I think that's a really good thing.
We got beef. We got beef with the listeners.
Yes, we do.
You're not holding up your end of the deal.
You got to share the show with your friends. You got to get, if you know somebody who drives a truck or who drives for a living or who does any of this type of work, get a hold of them. And get them on the show. Tell them to contact us and get them on the show. We'd love to talk with them. Yeah. We're always looking to talk to people. We're always looking to talk to people who are in the driving industry, one way or the other.
And I promise you, they'll say, nah, I don't know. I don't have anything to say. We have so many guests in the history of the show that said the same thing to us. Oh, I don't have much to say. And they wind up giving us 2 hours.
Yes.
So, you know, it's one of those things where just tell them these guys are chill. They just want to talk to people who've had experiences driving, people who drive for a living. Just go on the freaking show. So if you want, just go ahead and share the email address. Say, just think about it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So hllpodcast@protonmail.com. And if, you know, worst case scenario, tell them to call in 515-585-6375.
There you go.
I'm literally sitting here looking at the number. I'm like, wait a second. Did I say, which one did I say? 515 or 585?
What's
first?
Our number?
I don't freaking know. Okay. So prepare. Let's get to the prepare site. Listen, inflation's going through the roof. If you're listening to this show, you're listening to a show that a lot of truckers listen to, people who drive for a living. You know, I'm a former trucker. Dad still drives. Like, the idea of inflation is a very real thing. And, you know, if you talk to anybody who drives for a living, they'll tell you about the fuel prices and how that affects the economy.
Yep.
Listen, friends, I mean, when the fuel prices go up, so does everything else.
Let's look at it this way. If you're a truck driver and you have a truck that has 150-gallon fuel tanks on each side, that's 300 gallons. At $5 a gallon, you do the math.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a lot of math.
That's $1,500.
That's a lot of math.
Just to fill the tanks.
Once.
And you wonder why things are getting more expensive.
Right. And so, yes, like, things are going to be more expensive in the stores. So I've been telling people, actually, buy extra food now because it's actually cheaper now than it will be in the future.
Yep.
And also, with the future coming, is the shelves are going to be more bare. You can look at stores now and the shelves are getting bare. And so you just got to make sure you're going to be good to go with your family. Prepare with HLL. We're still shipping food out right now through that website. And so if you want to make sure you have emergency supply of food, now this isn't food like you're going to get in pouches and you have to drink the food. It's actually real food that comes in a bucket and it lasts 25 years. So say you make it through this inflation crisis craziness that we're going through right now and you didn't use it. I promise you in 25 years from now, you're going to have something come up where you're like, oh, thank God I have that food.
Yep. And if you don't, on year 25 in one day, get it all out, invite all your friends over and have a party.
Party.
Yep.
Have like a different stages of a party, because I know we have like pancakes and stuff. So
that's
like
right.
Have
Make
a breakfast party, lunch party, a brunch party, you know,
snack party.
Yeah.
You know,
by the time 5 o'clock rolls around for dinner, everybody's full and you're out of food and you're just moving on. So check it out. Preparewithhll.com if you're interested in just kind of stocking up on the emergency supplies. And last but not least, keep the old man caffeinated.
Please.
buymeacoffee.com/hammerlane. That's buymeacoffee.com/hammerlane. It's a virtual tip jar that is used to keep the veins filled with coffee. Now, we did try the energy drink and stuff.
Yes,
is that
did.
Something you're going to be investing in or no?
Probably not.
Probably not.
It's not as flavorful as coffee.
It's different flavor.
It's a different flavor.
It doesn't have the bland flavor. Yeah.
And, you know, a coffee cup is easier to keep from spilling in your truck when
you're
driving.
Yep. And I agree. Yeah, I'm not going to wake up in the morning and crack a can of energy drink,
right?
But I will always pour that black cup of coffee.
See that? There you go.
Always.
Every day.
And it's just like, it just wakes you up. Yes. So anyways, buymeacoffee.com/hammerlane. Check it out and, you know, leave some tips. All right. Listen, we got Verno on the show this week. Verno, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Tony. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing well. It's really good to talk to you. Thank you for your patience. And
for the 10th time, thank you. It's crazy. So we just got to tell the audience, we started recording the intros, outros with the guest on the line. And we tried introducing Verno, what, five times?
Four.
Four times?
This was time five.
Yeah, and we just couldn't get it working. I finally figured out what I was doing wrong. So Verno's here for the fourth time, first time for everybody else.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, man.
We definitely are.
So, Verno, man, listen, you sent over an email. It looks like you have a very interesting career, life in the driving field, but also other areas. And I'm going to let you kind of take the reins on a lot of this stuff because I have no idea really what you talked about in the email, you mentioned about being a hotshot. And right. I'm just like, is this like a what movie was that back Hot. In? It was Hotshots, right?
The hockey movie.
Wasn't there a Hotshots movie?
Yeah. There's been Hotshot movies, but wasn't there like a hockey movie named Hotshot?
Slapshot.
Slapshot.
Slapshot with Paul Newman, yes.
Wasn't there, what's the dude's name? Charlie Sheen. Didn't Charlie
Top
Sheen?
Gun.
Top Gun. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, well, with Charlie Sheen, it was Hot Shots. Yes.
Really?
It was Hot Shots.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I know I'm not the most cultured.
It was a spoof on Top Gun.
Oh, is that what it was? I don't know this stuff. I just saw Hot Shots and I was like, I think that's a movie.
Yeah, so, it was.
So, I didn't know if I was going to be talking to a famous actor or what I was going to be doing today. So, but it turns out we just got Verno. No, just kidding.
Wow. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Tony Merkel.
So,
an autograph later.
All right, sounds good. Please. So, Verno, tell me about what, I guess it's like an industry nickname as to like a job title, right?
Yeah. Well, yes and no. It's a hotshot crew is what they consider, you know, some of the most elite wildland firefighters. And there's only about, I think there's 113 hotshot crews in the nation. And basically what we do is we get a fire anywhere in the city, up in the mountains or whatnot. And we end up just responding to it. We're a national resource. I've been to Alaska. I've been all over the states. So, yeah, we're available to go anywhere. And as you can tell, you got to drive to get there and got to get there somehow.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you're taking
a crew,
like a whole firefighting crew to wherever it's needed.
Yeah. That's what we do. So what we got is, it depends. There's different configurations of how the crews are run, and what people, you know, get transported around. And we have what's called crew buggies. And, some crews use pickup trucks. Some crews use these little morph crew buggies. They're like half pickup truck, half crew buggy. But essentially what it is it's an international harvester chassis with a box built on the back. Eight guys sit in the back. And that's how we travel around the nation.
Wow, so, that's kind of cool.
Is it comfy?
Yeah. Well, they can be. The seats in the back, I mean, I don't know. I see the guys sleep a lot. It's comfortable enough. The cab sucks. There's not a lot of room in the cab.
Uh-huh. Wow.
But, yeah. So, and they've kind of changed since I started the job, what they used to be compared to what they are now, as far as the capabilities. And now they're automatics, and I don't much care for the automatics.
Yep, I heard that.
Nobody does.
Yes.
Nope. You just can't feel the road.
Yes, exactly.
I think anybody who has experience driving something that's not an automatic says the same thing. Yeah. Only people who don't know any better say that. So, you know, there are benefits, though. I mean, I always say they're coffee drinking trucks. I mean, automatics. Yeah. Have you not benefited from that? You can like literally steer with your left hand, hold the cup with your right hand, just cruise. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess
it's okay.
I like feeling the road though.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I like shifting gears. It's kind of the automatics are a different animal, especially in inclement weather. Mm-hmm. You know, you're paying attention no matter what. You know, when you're driving, you know, a truck or you know, a crew cab, whatever, you know, the whatever you guys call them there, the bug out or whatever they are, you know,
crew buggies, crew hauls.
There you go. You're always paying attention, and it's just there's just something about an automatic when you're driving, you know, a big truck, that's just different. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of lost. Yeah. It's lost the allure. Of being a truck driver.
It's luster. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it really has.
I would say I agree with you. I would.
However, it is a coffee drinking truck.
6 o'clock in the morning, when you're punching in at 6 o'clock in the morning, which I hadn't done that for a long time before I left, but when I was, and you're heading down the Schuylkill by 7, trying to wake up. When you're in automatic and you're just holding that cup of coffee, it has no lid on it because you filled it up in the break room, and you're just kind of balancing it, holding it, sipping on it, driving in bumper to bumper traffic. An automatic's not too bad.
That's the thing I was going to say is you know, when you're sitting in traffic, it's a lot easier with an automatic.
Yeah,
you know, it really is. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways,
Verno, it's nice to have you here.
How you doing?
Hey, I could just sit and listen to you guys talk.
We get sidetracked here. It's just a conversational piece.
We're like two ADD guys.
Oh, very much.
ADHD.
Add another one on there too. So.
Well, I think we attract ADD people or ADHD people.
We're easily distracted, you know.
It's like people who really like the show are kind of like on the mental wavelength as us. You know, it's just like
put
squirrel
shiny out here. Yep.
I tend to agree with that.
I gotta keep my blinds closed during interviews because I look out the window, get distracted, you know.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, look at the birdies, you know. All right, so being in this field, right, so I mean, we have other things we're going to be talking about here, but how did you get involved in that kind of, because it sounds like it's a unique career path in a sense where, you know, like it's not the firefighters that, you know, work out of the station down the street from me, you know?
Right. So, yeah, I kind of was told I was going to college by my parents, and I kind of got stuck in the JC system for quite a few years, like 5 years. And then I had a lot of friends doing the hot shot thing. And then one of my best friends, he got on a type two crew. So, there's types of different crews. The way that they're, typed is based off of their organizational structure and experience. So we have a lot more Type 2 crews around the nation than we do the hotshot crews. That's why the hotshot crews are specialized for a specific, you know, job task, and they're self-sufficient for 72 hours now is what we're supposed to be, self-sufficient for 72 hours, food, water, all that stuff. But, so where was I getting at? So how I got into it was I just took the class at the JC when I was taking the rest of my other classes, and I kind of fell in love with it, because the one thing about it is it's not the same thing every day. You know, you go to work and you don't know what you're going to be doing that day. You could be in another state by the end of the night. Mm-hmm. And I get to work out in the woods and hike all over God's creation and see some of the most beautiful places in the world.
That's so cool. That is really cool.
I started on that Type 2 crew, and it was just a coincidence. It was weird how it worked out. The nation had boosted. There wasn't as many hotshot crews, but it was probably about half the amount of hotshot crews that there are now. And the year I started, they had what was called a MELD buildup, and it's an acronym. I believe it's the most efficient level crews. Mm-hmm. So they're doing this MELD buildup, and we got all this funding that the nation got, or funded the Forest Service to start putting more crews together, and with the intent of them becoming hotshot crews. So that next season, one of those crews started, I got on that crew and helped get that crew certified as a hotshot crew. And then, that's how I got into it, is because it's outside and it's not the same thing every day. And I've thought about working in, I've considered working under UV lights before, but I can't get that far past the idea.
Yeah.
And another cool thing about being out in the wilderness, especially in California, is I get to find a lot of prime hunting land that I wouldn't normally on the daily.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. You spend every day out. That's a big office.
Yeah. So, yeah, I post on social media, you know, today's view from the office.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome. That is really awesome.
Because it literally is a different view every day.
Yeah.
So this sounds like it could be a good TV series. If you're looking for a reality TV show series.
Oh, man. That's funny. I totally forgot about this. So in 2005, they implanted, the Discovery Channel implanted these camera crews to go around with us. They were actually the camera crews that were off on the Deadliest Catch. And they implanted them with us to follow us around to try and come up with a program. They had one season, it was four episodes. My wife recorded all of them, and that's about as far as it went. And it was called Into the Firestorm.
Mm. Oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
So I got to make it on TV a little bit.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
You just mentioned about social media. So I was like, oh, let me look it up. So I typed in hot shots on Instagram. Do not type in hot shots on Instagram. I was like, oh, no, go back. We don't do not type in. And if Instagram's bad, don't do it on Google. Just my goodness. Oh,
it was funny to see his face. You should have seen it on this end.
Oh. My.
Yeah, there's lots of hot shots. That's funny that still use the name hot. They've left the agency and they started their own businesses outside of the agency doing other stuff. Like there's a guy who started a company. It's called Hot Shot Brewery, and he sells coffee.
Uh-huh.
And it's nationwide. I mean, around the world, but it's Hot Shot Brewery.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
That is really cool. That's the kind of guy I like.
So, being in this hot shots field, how much of a toll on your body does it take on you? I mean, because it sounds like, I mean, like I envision, like I, that's why I brought it up, the idea of a TV series, because to me it sounds like if you take the idea of a firefighter and then you like put it up on 10 different levels, it's like the hot shots is like the Navy SEALs of firefighters, you know? Like what kind of toll does it take on you?
Well, let's put it this way. I just had my third knee surgery 4 weeks ago.
Note taken.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty rough on the body. Not just physically, but emotionally, and it's just heck on the family.
Oh,
you're gone 6 months out of the, I, you know, on a good year, I'll be home maybe 4 or 5 times in 6 months just to come home, wash my clothes, pack back up and leave, you know? And they've kind of started recognizing the mental health issues that people are having with this job. So in the last year, when we do a 14-day roll, that's what like our max now. It used to be 21 days, but we do a 14-day roll and that doesn't count our travel. So whatever it takes to get there, 14 days and then, home. So 16-hour shifts, we get 8 hours off, you know, if we're lucky. So it takes a pretty big toll. And it's kind of crazy, the whole transition with technology too. Cause when I started, like barely anybody had a cell phone. And if you did, you were like, you barely used it cause it cost a lot of money.
Right. Right.
And, but now that's what everybody's just buried in their phone so they can keep in closer contact with their families. But when I started, we would be in a fire camp in the middle of nowhere and there would be a line because somebody would set up a phone, you know, a couple of phones and everybody would stand in line and it was like, you get a 5-minute phone call, you'd have to stand in line to get it.
Mm, wow.
But being on a hotshot crew, you're so busy that sleep's way more important than talking on the phone.
Oh yeah. I can imagine. Man, that's like, you know, when you get home 4 or 5 times every 6 months, that's like,
yeah,
that's just crazy.
It takes a toll on the family, I imagine. I mean, what's the like the turnover rate with the like divorces and stuff with the guys?
Oh, it's pretty high. It's pretty high divorce rate, but most of these guys kind of recognize that. Like this whole new generation of folks, like they don't look at relationships. You know, it's dime store stuff.
Yeah, you know that's true.
Kind of sad.
No, you're absolutely right, you know? Man. Like I like relatively, I mean, you're talking about my generation. I'm 36 years old and it's just, I'm different though. Like, I mean, I've been married for 15 years at 36, you know? Yeah, so
I'll be married 17 years, you know, next or 2 months from now. So it's the same thing, but like there's only not even a handful of us on our crew that are married.
Yeah. And those guys on the crew probably aren't even looking to get married, are they?
No, it's not nothing. They just want to play around. And that's what trips me out now, because with this technology, anytime we go into a, you know, a populated area, we're going to be staying the night. Everybody starts getting their social media devices out looking for girls.
Tinder.
Yep. I wasn't going to plug it because I'm not about that kind of stuff.
Right. Exactly.
Listen, everybody knows exactly what you're talking about anyways. I mean, like, I think I've said it on the show before. I don't know. But I mean, I just I don't envy people that are in the dating field these days. I mean, I know it's easier to meet people and stuff, but like it just seems like a pain in the butt to me. Like I always say, if something were to happen with my wife, like I'm single for the rest of my life, man. Like I'm out. Like
that's funny. My wife and I were just talking about that today after church. I was like, yeah, no, I don't want that trouble anymore. Like Paul said,
it's just not, it's just pain. Like I don't want to deal with it. Like I just don't want to deal with it. It'd be easier just to live by myself.
You know what? I've been happily married to Tony's mom. This was 34 years this year in May. And it's like, you know what? That's the best thing ever. You know?
Oh yeah.
I don't have to worry
my
about
my parents
nothing.
Have been married 45 years
that's
this year.
Awesome. That is awesome. That's a great role model for their kids.
Yeah,
it really
definitely.
Is.
So let's talk about marriage here with you. 17, you said 17 years.
Gonna be 17 years.
Did she marry you before or after you were a hotshot?
After I was a hotshot. She knew what she was getting.
I was just going to say, she knew what she was getting.
Yeah, she knew what she was getting.
Go ahead.
No, it's just, she knew what she was getting. I run into these kids all the time. You know, now that I call them kids, I hear them on their phones talking with girls, you know, trying to stay in relationships as a hotshot. And I'm like, look, you got two options. Either if you want a girlfriend, a steady girlfriend, go somewhere else and get a different job or don't have a girlfriend.
Right. Unless
because not every girl can be a hotshot wife. Yes, my wife. It takes a special woman to be a hotshot wife.
Yes. Yes, it does. Man, when you describe the kind of away from home time, you know, and you're at home time, you know, yes, it does. It does take a very special person to be able to deal with that.
Go ahead.
No, to the effect of like the from the daily when I am home during the season to the end of the season. So my wife constantly tells me, "Hey, look, you can't talk to the kids like they're hotshots."
What does that mean though? Like, how are you talking to the kids?
Well, I have to motivate, and now I'm a supervisor. You know, I'm a captain on a hotshot crew, so I help run the program, and I got to kick guys' butts in gear a lot. You got to yell at them so that they work, you know, that they function. And when I come home, I still have that mentality to the point where my wife's like, "Hey, you need to settle down, you know.
Yeah,
you need to go outside, take a break. Don't talk to the kids like they're hot shots."
Right. That's and it's hard to turn it off when it's part of your life 24/7 for any length of time. It's got to be hard to turn it off.
And then that transition out of it for 6 months. So you're in it for 6 months, just immersed in it. And then all of a sudden it just comes to an end because, you know, we have seasonal employees. Mm-hmm. So about half the crew is a seasonal workforce. And and beginning of November, they run out of hours to work and we got to lay them off. So now we have this crew. We have all these people that we used to talk with, you know, it is another family outside of our family. I always tell people I have two families. I have my work family and my home family, because you still have to deal with all these emotional problems that everybody else is dealing with while you have to work.
Right.
You know, you got 20 people, 20 heads that aren't going to be in the same mood every day.
Right.
And then we have, we call September Snap-tember, because that's about when everybody starts clashing, you know, tempers start flaring, the stuff that people are holding stuff in, it becomes Snap-tember, because people set off quick in September. And it's like you get through September and then you're like, okay, we got October and November fire season should be, you know, we lay our crew off. Every crew comes on. We kind of stagger right now to, so that we're available longer, you know, more crews can stay available more months. Mm-hmm. So we'll stagger coming on a few crews. I think this year in Southland, I think we have 4 crews coming on. Pay period 9, what they call pay period 9, and then we start staggering them on so that when those crews time out, we still have crews on.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, the thing is you know, like you were saying about Snap-tember, you know, in a job like what you're doing, everybody's head needs to be in the game all the time. You know, it can't be a point. You just can't. So you're the guy who's trying to motivate your crew to make sure their head's in the game. They're doing what they need to do because, you know, this is, you know, you got to make sure that the guy next to you doesn't die because of, you know, the fire got to him or whatever. You know what I mean? Like everybody's head has to be in the game. So that's stress. I mean, that's just that is like, you know, flat out stress, you know, for 6 months.
And at the same time, I got to recognize when my head's not in the game and let everybody, you know, hey, my head's not in the game.
Yeah. Because, you know, you're just as human as the next guy, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can imagine that's got to be a stressful job.
So right now, I'm assuming you're at home right now, right?
Yeah, I'm at home right now.
Okay. So,
I'm recovering, like I said, I'm recovering from my knee surgery. Our season starts April 24th.
Okay.
Are you going to be going out or are you still going to be in recovery?
No, I should be cleared to start getting back in shape at the beginning of April. We'll see.
Gotcha.
I kind of timed this out perfect. End of fire season, then hunting season, and then literally the weekend after hunting season ended, I had my
priorities.
You got that right.
That's awesome. I find this really interesting though, because I've never heard of hot shots. I never thought about people who do what you do. I mean, there's firefighters, there's the, you know, New York City firefighters. It's their full-time job to the small town firefighter that's on volunteer, you know? But I never heard of like traveling guys doing this stuff.
Right.
I find it very interesting. And being out on the road like that, it reminds me of Mike, Mr. Toot Toot, you know, because
Mr. Toot Toot, Mikey Toot Toot.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Because like he was talking about how like he spent time. I think it was Christmas. He was on the road.
Yep.
And I said, oh, man, that sucks. And he's like, actually, you know, it was kind of planned, you know. And so it takes a certain type of person to be able to do that kind of stuff.
It takes a certain mindset. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I've been lucky that I haven't had to work Christmas yet, which I probably could have. I just got out of it. But our fire seasons have been going longer and longer, and they get into December. Wow. So, like, was it a couple of years ago? We had lots of guys on fires on Christmas, but I've been on fires on Thanksgiving, out of the state.
Wow. That's a sacrifice. That's a sacrifice on your part and on your family's part, mm-hmm. you know?
Oh, absolutely. Like the biggest one, I think I've been home for 2 4th of Julys.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That is a wow. 2 out of all, out of how many years? Out of, you know, 17 years of your marriage.
Yeah. Going on 20. Yeah. 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 With my marriage too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But before I was married, I didn't really care, but.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
now I got the kids.
Yeah. It's one thing if you're single, it's another thing if you're married and, you know, then you throw kids in the mix and it's, you know, it's a sacrifice for the family to make.
So how long of adjustment is it taking you to do the switch? So, I mean, I imagine switching from being home to being out in the road is a quicker adjustment in the sense that you're in the job, you have things that you have to do, so you just kind of get back into it. But maybe switching from being out in the road to being home with the family, like how long does it take you to adjust to maybe you adjust to everybody else's emotions and attitudes and lifestyle? You know what I mean? Like, does it take a couple of weeks or do you just kind of like...
I would say it takes like probably a good month. I was thinking about this because I had kind of a breakdown a couple of years ago. I started recognizing that it was happening more and more at the same time every year. It was literally the month of November was my depression month, I guess you could say, trying to cut, you know, transition back into being a human being again.
Right.
But, and like I said, and that's at the same time, and I do it to myself, but, literally as fire season ends is when hunt season starts. And then I'm not home on the weekends anyhow, because now I've transitioned to going hunting every weekend and not being home.
Right.
Is that therapeutic, you think?
Yeah, it is very much so. It's like my therapy for sure. I like, there's nothing I like better than being, you know, miles away up on a hillside, just me and my dogs.
Yeah.
It's peaceful for me. Just walking.
Yeah.
I would suggest, cause you're in California, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I kind of hunt something that not a lot of people hunt. So.
Well, we can get into that in a second. Hang on a second. Before I miss my thought though. I imagine So are the hot shots coming in from all over the country, or are they all kind of stationed in Cali?
No, they're coming. So there's hot shots across not every state, but it's broken up into 10 different regions. Mm-hmm. California itself is one region, Region 5. And then you have like Washington, Oregon, that's a region. And then you got Region 3, which is Nevada, it's Arizona, New Mexico, and part of Texas. Basically from east of the Rockies is only 2 regions.
Okay.
And it would be, I think it's the, I can't remember what they call them, but it's regions 8 and 9. And there's 2 hotshot crews in each region down there.
Okay.
So you don't have
There's a hotshot crew really not far from where you're at. And, well, where you're moving to. There's one in Tennessee. There's a hotshot crew.
Well, that's good to know, because I might be needing a job here if the economy keeps going the way it's going. So,
I don't know if they take anybody your age to start.
Hey, don't. Hey, I got a bad rotator cuff that needs surgery. Hopefully, they can have a health insurance or something.
Hey, you can add it to the list of everybody else's injuries that complain about.
Perfect.
Sound like a bunch of old truck drivers.
The older. Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of parallels between this and the trucking industry. But you don't have to deal with in your off season, you actually have nice weather, where some of the guys, I imagine it would get to me if I had to work 6 months out of the year straight, killing myself, and then I get to be home and relax, and I look out the window, and it's bitter cold, snow on the ground. I can't even enjoy going outside or anything because, you know, it's wintertime. So you kind of, out of all the crews, I mean, you got a pretty sweet spot there in California.
Yeah, but we had snow at my house for about a month this year. It's cold. It gets bitter cold where I'm at in the Owens Valley.
See, I just think I think
California is all LA.
Yeah, I'm like California, 70 degrees year round.
Right.
I'm like an hour and 20 minutes. I can make it to Yosemite in an hour and 20 minutes.
Wow. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well,
I like where I live. I think the closest Target is, or Walmart is 3 hours away.
Wow.
Holy crap. You're out there, my friend. Wow.
So, I mean, we're just this small. I think our population in Bishop is somewhere, and it's debatable, somewhere between 3,500 year-round residents. Uh-huh. And then it's a big spot that people drive by all the time. So we get tourists back and forth because of this side of the of California is the most beautiful. There's one highway that goes from one end to the other, and you got to pass through Bishop. That's basically kind of the biggest stop on the way through. Okay. We used to have a Kmart, but they went out of business.
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
I worked at Kmart.
That's why they went out of business.
I know lots of people worked at Kmart, and that's why they went out of business.
All right. Well, listen, before we go into any other conversation about this stuff, you had my ears perk up. What kind of hunting are you doing?
Okay. So I chucker hunt. Have you ever heard of chucker?
No.
It's an upland game bird. It was introduced to the Americas in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and started having huntable populations probably close to like the 1920s. And they live in up on high peaks in rocky mountainous areas of somewhat the desert. It's kind of hard to like give a general description because you find them in different terrain across the so from California to there's chucker in Canada, so basically that range on the east of the so west of the Rockies. What they did was they planted them in areas that they thought were similar to where they were getting them in not Asia, but like they live in Turkey, they live in the Middle East, you know, they're all out there. That's where they're from, and they brought them out to America. Anyhow, they run really fast, and if you don't have a dog, you're typically not going to find them because you need a dog to find them. And when they do run, they run uphill. They don't run downhill. They run uphill. And then when you bust a covey, they fly a long ways away, and then you can see where they're at, and that you have to hunt your way over there, try and get to them again.
Wow.
I mean, so I feel like
I think on average this year, my dogs were putting in about 25 miles a day. Wow. Hunting chucker. Yeah.
Wow.
Like I feel like he just described he's hunting a prehistoric animal. Like I'm picturing like some kind of weird flying dinosaur or something.
Pterodactyl chucker. No, it actually sounds really cool. That does. Are these relatively big birds or kind of medium sized
so
or small?
Around about pound and a half.
Okay.
A pound and a half. Yeah. So they're probably about if you're familiar with a quail, about twice the size of a quail.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've been doing that. Well, my dad started me doing that when I was seven.
Wow!
And because of that, the people I know that hunt chucker, that are avid chucker hunters like me, it takes a toll on you as well. I mean, you've got to learn to deal with the suck because you literally punish yourself to hunt these birds. Like the saying goes, the first time you hunt chucker is for fun, and every time after is for revenge.
So it's like that.
There you go.
So it's like that.
It's a punishing sport, but I love it.
Do they taste? Do you?
I love them. They're delicious.
Do they taste like chicken or?
It's like you can't really compare it to chicken. Okay. It's hard to explain. It's a white meat. Uh-huh. Well, you know, it's the breast is a white meat. The legs are dark meat. I prefer the legs more than the breast, but it all depends on how good of a shot you are.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the reason that you compare everything to chicken because every time you hear somebody talk about something strange that they shot, it tastes like chicken. It's like alligator. Yeah. Tastes like chicken. Just, you know, I had elephant. I mean, it tastes like chicken.
That's how I feel about rabbit. I think rabbit tastes like chicken.
Really? Right before we called you, a former guest on the show a couple of times, Brian Shipper, he texted you a video of his son.
Yep.
His son's harvest of alligators in Florida.
Yep.
And the first thing I thought, I didn't say it out loud, but I thought, I wonder what that tastes like. Probably like chicken.
You eat rattlesnake, it tastes like chicken, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I remember watching Crocodile Dundee and they're making bats over a fire and he goes, tastes like chicken.
Tastes like chicken.
That's why it's like, you know, it's just
stupid. Side note, I don't know if I asked you this, does Shipper say that they bring the meat back for food and stuff then?
Yeah, he was. He was bringing, he was having it shipped back. He was having,
I know he's listening right now.
Flew down to Florida.
Shipper, I would like to try back. Some if it's possible. I would, if it's jerky like or whatever, chicken. I would like to try.
Exactly. Well, you know, tastes like chicken. You can go to the store and buy one.
It's a lot of work to eat something that tastes like chicken.
Right? Exactly. Exactly my thoughts.
Well, this hunting. Chuckers. It sounds like it's a lot of work, but it sounds like you enjoy it, and it the payoff is that you enjoy it and you get time out, you know, out in the field, kind of out in the woods doing your thing, you know, and that's the payoff sometimes.
And then I go through depression when chucker season's over too. So chucker season starts midway through October and ends the last weekend in January. That's in California, and then I get too addicted to do it that I don't live that far from Nevada, and Nevada gets an extra weekend. And if I really wanted to go, I'd go back. I can go another weekend, the weekend after that, and go to Utah if I wanted to.
Wow.
Your wife has got to be an awesome, awesome woman. That's all I can say.
I have absolutely the best. God gave me the best wife. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Everybody goes, how is she still married to you?
does she know your name?
She's probably very independent, you know. She has her own thing going on. She's like, "Go ahead,
oh, man."
That's fantastic.
She's great. I love her to pieces. I can't do life without her.
I heard that.
Yes, sir.
I mean, especially with my job, I can't do life without her.
Yeah. Man, you got that right.
So, all right. Now we covered this whole career path, which I find just very interesting. Is this considered a government job?
Yes, it is. I work for the federal government. And
so they're definitely not going to hire me.
I don't know. We hire some characters, man. It doesn't matter. As long as you don't lie on your application, you're good.
Okay.
Well. You lie on your application and you ain't getting a job, but or you'll lose it.
Right.
But yeah, no, they don't. Yeah, we hire everybody as long as you're, you know, honest. I mean, who else are you going to get to do my job?
Yeah, ain't that the truth? They got to take volunteers because they ain't recruiting.
They'll be like, what is your experience with the forest? Well, I hunt monsters like Bigfoot and Dogman. You know, I'm fairly familiar with the forest.
Oh, man.
And the guy who told me to apply said not to lie. So there you go.
What's my For experience sure. with the forest? I drive by one every night. Oh, no,
I live right next to the forest. But no, man. I look for monsters too, but I've already determined that based on Sasquatch theory, they don't like fire and they're not going to be anywhere near it.
Right. There you go. That's right.
That's my reason why everybody's like, well, hey, look, I spend more time in the woods than anybody I know. I should have a chance. No, I don't, because I'm around fire.
And they're going the opposite way.
He's running with the deer. Way, that's right.
I've had some pretty cool stories. Like my boss's wife works on a helicopter, or works for a helicopter company. It's a contract for the force, mm-hmm. or for the government. And they have a Cobra helicopter with all that night, you know, all the cool vision stuff on it.
Right.
And she was watching the screen and they saw something running through by the fire that was not human. And it was really big. And everybody was like, did you see that? And it was, and then they were like, yeah, what's this over here?
That's exactly. There you go. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Squirrel.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess they would head out of the area for sure during the fires.
Oh yeah.
I did see a picture a couple of years ago from the California fires, and I don't know if it was real or not, but I just remember somebody sent me a picture, and it was supposedly a forest firefighter came across a big print in when they were kind of doing cleanup and stuff. Yeah, but it was only one print, so it must have been one of the disappearing kind.
Well, I was on during the corona, they were separating everybody on a fire and everybody was sleeping miles apart. And I was on a fire by Willow Creek where the Patty film was taken. And I had some tree knocks happen that I couldn't explain. So I think it's out there.
Yeah, me too. I'm gonna move topic so that we don't.
I know. Let's get off of the. Yeah, that's a different show.
It's for the other show.
So
yeah.
So you had to get your CDL, your commercial driver's license for these buggies, right?
Yeah. Well, not technically for the buggies. So when I got the apprenticeship with the Forest Service, it was part of a requirement of our apprenticeship was to get a commercial your Class B commercial, you know, so you could get all your endorsements and whatnot, right. But it's not required to drive crew hauls because they don't meet GVW.
Okay.
And they don't meet some of them do in some of the states because the way they're configured, but the ones that we have don't meet GVW and four passengers. So there's only 10 people in there. Mm-hmm. But the reason being is all our fire engines are CDL. So you never know when you were going to be driving one, especially when you're an apprentice or you just come out of the apprenticeship, they want you driving. So I didn't really, I maintained mine for several years, and I occasionally would drive a fire engine, but I didn't have to drive, I didn't have to have it. I finally let it go. It was kind of getting in my way.
Right. Yeah. I know how you feel.
Well, I mean, my dad's retired and he still maintains his A.
Does he really? How long has he been out?
2 years.
No kidding.
Yeah, going up to you. Yeah, but my dad took a 94, his vehicle that he drives on vacation when he goes anywhere. He took a 94 Suburban, he put a Cummins diesel in it. It has a five-speed transmission with a two-speed in it, so it's a split. And he put a one-ton and a front and rear differential in it. And then he tows a toy hauler so that he can have another vehicle in it wherever he's going. It's like his hunting rig.
Wow, that is cool.
Whew.
That is really cool.
Your dad's
that
serious.
That's cool, man.
Oh, my word, I bet.
Yeah, it was quite interesting watching him put that Cummins in that Suburban. He basically cut the whole front of it off.
Yeah.
And then rebuilt it. So now the grill is the intercooler.
Wow. Can you see over the hood?
Yeah, seriously.
No, there's nothing sticking out top of the hood at all.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And he's retired. Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I would you hold your CDL if you left the trucking industry before you retired?
You know, I don't know. I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. You know, 30 years of doing this, I don't know.
It's funny. So when I was going through the whole, I don't want to keep my, I was kind of on a force. They were making me keep my CDL.
Uh-huh.
But my birthday is always in the during fire season, and that's when your driver's license expires, is on your birthday.
Right.
So we were leaving for a fire, and I was, crap, my medical was going to expire. So it expired en route to this fire, right? And we demobbed, and we were in Utah, and they had the CHP inspect our vehicles in demo, which I'd never, not CHP, sorry, Utah, but, and I never had this happen before, but he comes up and he goes, "Hey, can I see your medical? I know you guys are exempted, don't need it, but can I see it?" And I'm like, "Dude, it's expired. Great. What am I going to do?"
Right.
Well, my friend, my other driver, he pulled his out and the cop started looking at his and he's like, "Who filled this out? This is filled out wrong. You need to go get a new one." And, I looked at him and I said, "Oh, I just got a new one and I haven't got my new card in the mail." He's like, "Oh, all right, good." Didn't even ask to see my car or anything. Wow. So, but I'm like stressing the whole time. Like, man, I got this expired medical.
Yeah, I'd be stressed too. I'd be stressed too.
Yeah.
Man.
So I'm like, what are the odds? I never get checked for this thing and I go to Utah and we're demobbing and then he wants to see it.
I mean, I feel like the odds are ever increasing because, I mean, whenever you're put in a situation where like you don't have what you need, but you always have it over the time, that's when you know it's going to happen. I mean, it just always works that way. Because you're going to be left holding the bag saying, what are the odds? Right. It's like, well, fate. It's called fate.
Absolutely.
So I know you mentioned in the email to us that you've had a couple accidents with should I call it a fire hydrant or what?
No.
Yeah, I know. That's why I don't know what to call it. What should I call it?
Okay. So the crew buggy?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was inside. So here's the crazy thing was it was a weird morning. And we were on a fire, a local fire. And we were going home every night. And we were leaving the station that morning. It was real eerie. Where our it was the year I was on the helicopter, and it's kind of cool. This helicopter that I was on, the helipad was right on what they call the crest. It was on the San Bernardino National Forest, but on a clear day, you can see the ocean and you can see Mount Whitney out in the distance on a clear day. So you can see pretty far. You can see the Death Valley, and it's a high spot where you can see everything. Mm-hmm. But the way that the clouds were coming up and over this ridge, they were starting and then disappearing, and they were going quick, and it was real eerie, and I had this weird eerie feeling. And we started to leave, and they're like, "Hey, Lee's going to be driving today. He's doing driver's training." I'm like, "Okay." So I looked at everybody and I said, "Hey, put your seatbelts on." And they all laughed at me and joked, you know, they're like, "Whatever, dude." And I was like, "Hey, dude, it's our policy. You've got to wear our seatbelts." And they were like, they kind of groveled at me and put their belts on. Well, we were on this stretch of road that was literally almost sheer cliff. And the driver tagged the guardrail going on an outturn. And when it did, it kicked the butt end of it around coming on the intern, because it was a real quick outturn and intern. So the whole back end was sliding out and went perpendicular with the guardrail, and we shot just straight over the guardrail. Started tumbling down. On impact, the truck broke into two pieces, the cab and the box, and we were tumbling down separately. But after, you know, we all got out of there, everybody was fine. There was a few of us injured that we, you know, it took a little while to recover from, but everybody was fine. Every single time I run into one of these guys again, or I see them, they all thank me for telling them to put their seatbelt on, because they wouldn't have.
Yeah.
They're like, "Dude, you saved my life." So like you're saying, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen to me. And here's the craziest thing too, was I was reading the Bible when it happened. Wow. And I knew exactly where we were. And I'm like, "Dude, this is a long ways down." And, I had this adrenaline rush and I started to throw up, and on impact, it like shot back down my throat. And then I had just little vomit stuff all over me when we came to a stop. But yeah, we went over about 300 feet over the side, and like I said, end over end almost four times. And then the box stuck up against the tree, or a tree stopped with the box. And it was on the back door. I remember I was like, I got to jump out, see if I got to get a trauma bag. And I look up and it's like 12 feet in the air, and the tree's holding the door shut on the trauma. So we didn't have anything. And I was trying to get a radio, and it had just thrown everything out of the truck, and I couldn't find a radio. So my squad boss at the time was on the phone trying to talk to dispatch. We didn't have a good spot where there was service. Finally got a radio, and there was a hotshot crew, a couple of turns down the road, that ended up coming over and assisting to get some over the side gear, ropes and stuff to get everybody out. And the driver is freaking out, thinks he killed everybody. And then once he found out everybody was okay, he ended up quitting his job. He's like, "This is just what I needed to quit anyhow. I don't need to be here." So yeah, he ended up quitting his job.
So he was looking for reasons to quit, it looks sounds like.
Yeah, he was already looking for reasons to get out, and that was just the one right there.
Yeah. Was he a young guy? Was he a young kid?
No, he was quite a bit older than me. He was a cool dude. He had learned how to read in jail. He was from LA downtown. Like, he got out, wow, like he had a second chance at life.
Yeah.
And he took advantage of it, you know, and he like taught himself how to read when he was like 19 or 20.
Wow.
And it would be cool, because like we'd be talking and he'd say, "What was that word? Like, can you write that here?" And he had a book he carried with him, and he would write new words down in it all the time.
Wow.
So that he would remember it.
Yep.
He was serious about it. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Wow. Yeah. You know, you think about being here in America and you're like, of course, you know, a 20-year-old knows how to read and write, but it depends on the situation that they grew up in and stuff.
Sure.
You know, like, I mean, not being far from Philadelphia, I mean, there are some really poor schools in mm-hmm. Philadelphia. They don't have the funding, and, you know, it just, I could see how that could happen. You know, but I actually was friends with a guy who kind of had a similar thing. He got sent to jail for 7 years. Because when he was 18, him and his friends were going to convenience stores and robbing them, and they were always high, And because they were high, they had the munchies. So they were always stealing Slim Jims when they were robbing these places. So they started calling them the Slim Jim Bandits.
Wow.
And they finally got caught, and he gets put in jail for 7 years. And in jail, he took some automotive classes. And he, when he got out, he started working at the garage I worked at as a mechanic, became a lead mechanic. Then he became the store manager. And now he's a manager over at Volvo. Yeah. So, I mean...
It's crazy how it changes your life.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Your past does not determine your destiny.
Yeah.
No.
You know, it just doesn't. So, but I'm glad that you guys were all safe getting back.
Yeah.
I mean, holy then, cow. That's a heck of an accident.
The one I was in, and then it's weird. I had this dream shortly after I was in that accident that I had witnessed another crew buggy accident. And I went to another crew, and we were out on so it's 4th of July night, and they're always worried about wildfires around here. So they basically post us up at different spots just to keep eyes out on the forest and whatnot. Well, we were coming home, and the other truck in front of us, the captain said, watch out for that dog. And he looked up and he swerved to miss the dog. And there was about a 20-foot drop off on both sides of the road, and they shot that truck off and it landed sideways. So we had to respond. We had basically the whole forest there and all the municipal departments. Once they finally showed up to try and get everybody out of the truck, there was people stuck in the truck. Fortunately, everybody survived, but there was a few pretty gruesome injuries, like a broken neck and stuff.
Wow.
And that one ended up taking the guy out of his job forever.
Yeah. That is something I've always been afraid of, is the broken neck. Like broken neck and pinkies. Can't take it.
Oh man.
I'm telling you, it's just like my worst fear. Like I'd rather lose an arm.
That's like a weird
split. I know.
Necks and pinkies.
So the thing is,
everything else is good.
Yeah. Like I can live without an arm, right? So here's the thing. I always equate broken neck to death. So I'm scared to death to break my neck. But the pinkies, man, like basically my fingers, like, oh, I hate jamming my fingers and toes.
Oh, man.
I'd rather lose the arm than break a finger. Like just straight up.
I'm pretty sure I broke my pinky on my first job I ever had, but I never went and got it checked out. I was throwing like a 75-pound bag of trash over the dumpster. You know, you get some momentum, you start swinging it in a circle to build some momentum.
Right.
And I got it up and over the dumpster, but it hung up on my pinky. And the trash went in and grabbed my pinky, and the same thing, man. Oh, man, it hurt so bad. But like I couldn't use it for weeks. Man. But I never went to the doctor because I hate doctors.
If that happened to me, I'd still be on disability.
Oh, my word.
I'm a fragile human being.
Yes, apparently you are.
Inherently put myself in danger all the time. So,
I mean, your career path is just like life or death
every day.
Dude, it's crazy. I watched that helicopter crash on our helibase the same year that crew buggy accident. You know those big sky cranes?
Yeah.
The big ones they use to build buildings with and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I watched it fall out of the sky from about 60 feet, man, and hit the deck. And I had to go get the pilots out. It was crazy.
Wow. That is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he survived?
Yeah, they both survived, man. They were beat up. The one dude was trapped in the helicopter for 45 minutes because the crash rescue engine that was on scene didn't have the right blade to cut the cyclic out. He was stuck. His leg was pinned inside by the cyclic and he couldn't get out.
Wow. Wow. That's got to be scary, dude. That's got to be scary.
Oh. Jeez.
Well, I mean, I was on a rappel ship. I seen some crazy stuff.
you were on what? What was that?
A rappel ship. The year we were on, or when I was on the helicopter, it was a rappel helicopter. Mm-hmm. And I seen some pretty close calls on rappel ships.
Sounds like it. Holy crap.
Yeah, you got that right.
Do you ever have bad dreams from your job? Like, does it ever give you nightmares? Just like some of the close calls and just, you know, seeing like the fires all the time. Did it ever give you bad dreams, or is it just kind of like normal for you?
No, you know, it's funny is I really don't dream unless I'm on fires, and that's when I dream. But the worst dreams, dude, here's the worst dreams in the world. You work your butt off all day long, cutting line, and you fall asleep and you dream about cutting line all night. And then you wake up and then you got to go cut line. It's the worst dream in the world.
Yes, it is.
So your 14 shift turns into 24 hour shift.
Yeah, basically.
Wow.
I hate those dreams. When I have those dreams, it drives me nuts.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's so I do remember there would be times where I'd have dreams about the job, and it was always like losing control of the truck and like I'm like about to head off a bridge or something like that. And that's the scariest feeling in the world because it feels so real.
You know what's amazing? Yeah. Is the weird places you find yourself in your big truck when you're dreaming. You know what I mean? Like when you're at home sleeping, you're dreaming, and the places you're able to drive your big truck.
Yeah.
I'm like, this doesn't make
any crazy.
In my head, I'm like, this is not making any sense. I'm literally thinking this is like, no, this is wrong.
So
how am I back here? How am I in these woods in this big tractor trailer? How is this working?
You spent too many time or too many hours that day watching trucker memes.
Hey, so I had a guy at my first job. I worked at a cafe for like 3 years, but it was a big stop next to the highway. The truck drivers always came in there, mm-hmm. and this guy was telling me this story. It was a lost time account, basically. I don't know. Anyway, he's like, look, I drove home and I went to bed in his rig. Mm-hmm. He's like, I woke up the next morning 3 hours away in a different county.
Wow.
He's like, somehow I drove 3 hours and didn't know it.
Sleep
or
driving.
I don't know how I got there. Sleep driving.
Yeah.
But he's like, I got home. I went to bed. I woke up. I was three counties over.
Wow.
Get that guy's number. I want to talk to
That's
him.
That's freaking scary, right? Dude. Yeah.
He was an old timer. He used to stop in all the time.
Man. Yeah, I know when we did that episode with the diner episode, a lot of people.
Oh, really, the 50s diner?
Yeah.
Yep.
that got a lot of response from people. I was surprised, but like people are like, you know, fascinated by it, asking, you know, was it here? Was it there? I'm like, I don't know where it was, guys. I don't know.
My scariest dream is that I get to retirement age and then they up my age.
Just refuse to work.
Job, man. We have a mandatory retirement and fire of 57 years old. You can't work past 57, but they've been trying to up it to like 62. And I'm like, I don't want to work doing this long.
Don't do this. No.
Do you think that, because I mean, you've been in it for 22 years. Do you think that after that long of doing this lifestyle, retirement would be easy for you? Or do you think it would be hard?
I'm not planning on doing the whole stint.
Okay.
I when I can go out, I'm going to, because my body's already wrecked from this stuff. I don't need to get any worse. So I'm looking at finding, I don't want to go upper management, but I want to find a job where I don't have to work with the crew so much anymore. Mm-hmm.
I thought you said they were family.
They are family.
Yeah, so you want to live with your family? You want to live with my family? Yeah.
Point taken.
Yeah. You know, I don't care what it is, but when it's time for me to go, it's time for me to go. Yeah. And I'm going to find, I'm trying to dance delicately around this.
What?
But like when I'm done, I'm done.
Yeah.
And my license is going.
My dad talks about retiring for like 70. Oh, I'm retiring this year. Oh, I'm retiring this year. Oh, I'm like, finally, he stopped talking about retirement. My mom calls me one day. She's like, your dad retiring on Friday. What? Friday? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I asked that question because like some people, like in the trucking industry, I mean, it's not uncommon to hear, hey, Larry retired last year and he died this year. And it seems like your body has a hard time adjusting to a new lifestyle. And it just sounds like your lifestyle with your job choice, career choice, it seems like it requires a lot out of your body, just like the idea of being a truck driver on the road all the time. And I was wondering, like, if you've ever heard of something like that, or, you know, is the transition like that, if you thought it'd be easy or not?
I think it's going to be easy. I think the hard part is going to be being lazy, because, you know, every morning, like I haven't been because I've been injured, but we get a certain amount of time to PT every morning and do physical training. Mm-hmm. And usually I'll go on an hour hike. And that's what I do every morning. I don't like running because it hurts my knees really bad. But if I can't get out to go for a hike, I'll do something short, little run.
Right.
But it's maintaining that past retirement. Am I going to want to keep doing that? But at the same time, my hobbies kind of force me. I always tell everybody, I'm like, because I've been on crews where I did PT and they're like, dude, I never see you PT. And then we go out and do a fire and you're like kicking butt. What the heck? I'm like, well, you guys don't see what I do outside of work for my hobbies.
Right.
You know, I hike in to go fish. I hike in to go hunt. I still stay in shape just because you don't see me doing it.
Right. And you know, that's the beautiful thing about retirement is you can do that 7 days a week. Look out, Checkers. He's on his way.
Am I still going to want to do it when I'm not getting paid to do it?
Well, you know.
I see what you mean by lazy. I saw in my short time in like the real trucking industry, because I mean, I've been driving CDL since 21, but like Pitt, Ohio is like my entrance into the real industry of driving.
Yeah.
I saw two drivers that I work with. One, he was planning on retiring and he left early because of cancer and he was gone.
Right.
And then another one, literally they found him in the truck, you know? And so it's just like two guys who are planning on retiring, just their bodies just breaking down. And I imagine it's go ahead.
It's the same thing. I think about it. Like I look at, and I don't know what it is, but it seems like every time I see somebody do the distance, do their 57 years, they either don't retire or they retire from the agency and they work somewhere else, or literally they die within a couple of years.
Right.
Like if they don't do the job anymore, they'll die in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
It really seems like hearing you say that and knowing that there's a similar thing that happens in other industries, it makes me feel like the human body, when you do a certain job for so long that like it's demanding of the body. The body becomes the job, and when you take the body from the job, the body just does not know how to react to anything else. And it's like it's like the body saying, "This is not what I was made for," and I'm not
used to this.
Yeah, like system can't compute, shut it down, reboot, kind of thing.
Yeah, like if you ever get to the point where you get enough rest, your body's like, "What is this sleep thing? I don't know." They just told me I'm supposed to do it, so
I don't know, but I like it.
But no, you know, and speaking of that, I mean, literally just last weekend, the guy who used to run the dock at Pitt in Allentown in the morning, he retired last year around April or May, I guess it was, maybe June, and he died Sunday.
Man.
He ran the dock, you know, it's like,
it's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy. And he was a great guy. He really was. Jeff was a really nice guy.
And just to let people know that maybe don't know, like running those docks is not easy. It's stressful. Yeah. You're dealing with whatever the weather is, you know, like even rain. I mean, you have a roof over you, but it's splashing in on the dock.
Yeah, because you got doors that are open all the way around the building, and it's cold in the winter because it's not really heated or anything.
It is biting.
Jockeying drivers around where they need to be, all that stuff, different personalities you got to deal with. You got the guys in the dock or in the warehouse stuff. You got the guys in the truck.
Yep, exactly.
Sometimes you got to be a referee.
Yep, you know it. Yes, sir. You know it.
So there was this one time. I don't think I've ever told this story because it was while I was still. Yeah. So let me just tell it. Let me just tell the story. So I almost got in a fight at Pitt. I came in the morning and there was this guy. I think he's still at Pitt. I don't know. But so I won't name drop. But the guys who listen, who know the story, they know who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I walked in and there was this guy that I guess apparently was known to have a short fuse, and I had never experienced a short fuse with him, and I'd never had anybody tell me that he had a short fuse. And for years, him and I had been chatty back and forth, cool and everything. And it was a 6 o'clock morning shift. And I walk out in the dock to go look for my trailer. And he was walking by me. And I literally walked by him, just kind of gave him a little shoulder bump, you know, what's up morning kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And as I continue to walk, my hand starts stinging because he had turned around and kicked me in the hand.
Wow.
And he starts cussing me out. And I look at him and I'm like bewildered as to what's going on. But he's calling me an a-hole and this, that, and the other, just going off. And then, like, the doc supervisor, like, is standing there just kind of, like, laughing. And I'm getting, like, you know me. Like, I'm like,
right,
motherfucker. Like, I'm like, yo, this, like, I, like, I'm like, bro, like, I'm about to go in with you. And so I walked out into my truck. And I was already in a bad mood because they had me in a straight truck that morning. So, like, I go out into the truck, and the straight truck is facing the dock. Mm-hmm. And I literally sat there for about 20 minutes debating with myself back and forth because I was like, I'm going to go in there and kick his ass. Mm-hmm. And then I actually called, or no, my friend Kyle called me. What possesses my friend to ever think to call me at 6:30 in the morning?
Right.
But he called me just as I'm making a decision that I'm about to go get fired. And I answer the phone, and he's like, wanted to ask me a question about something. And he's like, I figured you'd be awake. I'm like, yeah, but since I'm awake, I need to tell you what just happened so you can talk me off the edge. Because I was like, I'm going to go get fired now. Like, because right. like, it was before the kid. So, like, I was just like, you know, I didn't have any kids. Yeah, I think, you know what? I'll go get another driving job. Like, I'm not going to deal with this. I'm going to go kick. I'm going to go get in a fight. Like, right. We're going to go fight.
Funny how your perspective changes once you have children, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
You got that right.
I can't tell you how many times I've been in a position where I look at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, my decision making and my reaction to this situation would be totally different if it happened 4 years sooner before my son was born. Like,
right?
Like, all of a sudden, like,
and then you start to feel old and mature.
Right? It's reality, though.
Then your kids grow up and move out of the house, and you're right back at that point where it's like, I could do this, but then your body's like, no, your body's going, you can't do that. You'll lose.
I know lots of guys, I go, hey, how long do you got to retire? They're like, oh, I can retire whenever I want. He's like, so my plan is, you know, whatever the date is, or one bad day.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, we've had guys who have retired in a day. We've had guys who, they got their, you know, like, they used to call us at night and tell us what we're doing, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And he didn't like what, so he retired. He's like, I'm done. I'm retiring right now. It's like, yeah, that's how I want to go out.
Hey, Larry, you got the worst run of the night. No, somebody else did. No, I'm retiring.
Oh, I didn't tell you? Where's my cake?
Ay, ay, ay.
But, you know, the beautiful thing is, and this is the thing that I always try and remind myself, no matter how much I fail at it, and I fail at it all the time, you know, when you have words with anybody at work, and you do, I mean, that's work. That's, you know, living in the world that we live in, is tomorrow's another day, and you have to let it go. You have to let yesterday go and not bring it into today. You know, it's one thing I try to do.
It's real hard when you live with people for 14 years.
Yes, it is. I can imagine.
The terrible thing is people's hygiene and habits, you know, like, we sleep on the ground. We don't sleep in tents. We just throw a bedroll out, sleep on the ground, and some people stay up late. Some people have their phone out. Like, I'm one of those guys. I can't sleep, so now I'm keeping everybody else awake because my screen's bright. So I got to find a spot where I'm not fogging anybody else. And that guy's feet, he hasn't changed his socks in 2 weeks. His feet smell terrible.
I can smell your feet 30 feet away, dude.
It's amazing how much you don't realize you stink. Yeah. Until you get back from a fire and you take a shower and you smell your clothes that you were wearing.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my gosh, I smell like that. That poor lady behind me at the gas station must hate me.
Well, what's this guy been doing? Living in the woods? Well,
yeah, literally.
Yeah, right?
I didn't realize that you guys, that's the conditions you're living in as far as sleep goes. I mean, like, no tent, just roll it out and sleep.
No tent. Yeah, the only time we'll tent up is like if we get rain or something, or it gets really, really cold. But for the most part, no, we throw a bedroll out, sleeping bag, pillow. Usually it's too warm to eat it in your sleeping bag, so you just sleep on top of it, or when it starts to get cooler, you get in it. Wow. A lot of times, you know, we're we're miles away from any civilization up on a hilltop chasing it through the wilderness. So we're sleeping away from everybody. Just that's when we have to start contending with bears and stuff like that.
Wow.
The more I hear you talk, man, about your job, I swear there.
The happier he is that he didn't do it.
No. Well, no, so I'm an adventure guy, and this sounds like an adventure, you know. Yeah. And so,
dude, it is, man. It's a vacation.
I'm telling you, man,
that's not the kind of vacation I think about, dude. I'm not. Yeah,
every now and then, there's that fraction, that glimmer. I'm like, man, I get paid to do this. And then it goes away real quick.
Yeah, it usually does. That thought usually is a passing thought.
I thought the same thing a truck driver for my first 2 years.
Yeah. I get paid to do this. I get paid to drive.
I get paid to drive around, listen to the radio, and stop about 20 times and drop something off and keep it moving.
Right.
And then all of a sudden reality kicks in and you're like, oh, this isn't, no, okay, yep, this kind of sucks. Yeah.
Did you have a unique handle, Tony, when you were driving?
No, I didn't have a CB, man. Like I was one of the new version of truck drivers where we were antisocial, no CB,
no handle, and no CB, right? Yeah, exactly.
No CB, you know.
Oh man, when I was a kid, we did road trips so much. My dad always had a CB so we could listen for the fuzz.
Oh, there you
go. Just listening to the conversations between the truckers driving through, you know, it was just great.
it's a lot of fun. Vern or Verno, let me ask you something real quick before we end this though.
Yeah,
Verno, is that like, that's got to be a nickname, right? Mom didn't name you Verno.
No, so my middle name is Vernon. And we went on vacation when I was six. Mm-hmm. And my name's really James, but I've never gone by James except legally my whole life. I got called Jimmy. And my dad's James, but they always called him Jim. And then I went up, and then my cousin's name was Jimmy. So every time somebody would say Jimmy or Jim, everybody would turn around. So my dad just said, okay, you're Vern.
Nice.
So it stuck at six, and now I didn't really like it at first, but I kind of grew into Vern, and now I'm this Vern character. So yeah, Verno is pretty much what everybody calls me.
I think it's a cool name, man. I just knew Mom didn't name you that.
Yeah,
so
that's a great nickname.
But
I'm named after one of my grandfather's friends.
Well, here's a question for you too. What did you, like, when you were a kid with your dad, did you have a handle on the radio? Did your dad kind of give you
something? No, my dad sort of stayed off the radio. He just liked to listen to it or ask around. He never talked. My dad's not a big social person at all, I would say. He's very antisocial.
To be honest
I'm
with you.
I'm totally opposite.
That's 90% of truck drivers nowadays. You know, you're driving in the middle of the night and you got bad weather, or you know that there's an accident. You see a sign that says there's an accident ahead, and you're like, you know, trying to get the 20 on the accident ahead. And nobody answers you. Nobody calls back. Yeah, you're heading westbound. You're asking the eastbound. Hey, eastbound, what's going on? What's a 20 on the accident? What's 20 on the weather behind you? What'd you leave behind you? Nothing. Literally nothing. And then when you get up to the accident and you're like, hey, you know, because you're sitting there in line now, and you're like, well, you know, what's going on ahead? Well, weren't you listening to your radio? Yeah, I was listening to my radio. Yeah, and I was asking, and nobody's freaking answering.
See, that's the exact attitude why I wouldn't talk on the seat. Give me attitude like that. Give me the 20 on your truck, MF-er. Let's go have a talk in this traffic jam. Like, don't talk to me like that. I'm asking questions.
And my handle is Meatloaf.
Meatloaf, huh?
Yes, sir. Like the singer.
Like the late singer?
Yes, sir. Like the late singer. Oh, wow.
Crazy.
All right. Well, Verno, man, I appreciate you coming on. This was a unique conversation,
you know?
Like, it was very interesting, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Well, thanks, man. Appreciate it. You keep up that good work, man. I really enjoy listening to all of your stuff.
We really appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Even though I'm not a paying member yet.
Do you listen to the other show, too?
What other show?
Oh, beginning. Since the beginning.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thanks, Wes.
I don't know who that is, but I hear he's a great guy.
He is one of my favorite podcasters in the world.
Yeah, okay.
He is.
He really
is. Shout out to Wes Germer.
Germer Wes. So, Vern, it's been much appreciated.
Very much.
Everybody else, listen, if you liked the conversation and you want to hear more and you want to ensure this show keeps moving forward, you got to share the freaking show.
You have to.
In order for us to pick up more listeners, and those listeners want to email the show and tell their stories, we got to keep growing the show, and we don't grow the show without you sharing the show. So friends, hit the freaking share button, take the link of whatever you're listening on, text it to everybody, put it on your social media, and tell people to listen to the freaking show, right?
Amen, brother. You got that right.
All right, guys. Until next week, keep the hammer down.
In the hammer lane.
Bye.